Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. And we hear that, and immediately we tune right out. You see, we don't think we need a shepherd, because we're not sheep. I mean, if you were to think of yourself as an animal, what animal would you be? A lion? An eagle? A puma? I've never heard anyone say, actually, I like to think of myself as a sheep. Now, we only ever call someone a sheep in a derogatory tone to mean they're a bit of a follower. Now, we like to think of ourselves as strong and free and wise, masters of our destiny, captains of our soul. But God says that the animal that best expresses our experiences of being human is a sheep. We are all sheep, and we all have shepherds. We all have people who tell us what is cool and what is uncool, what is right and what is wrong. People who teach us how to think, how to feel and what to live for. If we have answers, none of us have thought them up by ourselves. We've learned them from the people who have shaped us, shepherded us, led us, in fact. And the question we need to ask is, are these shepherds who shape our lives any good? Are they good leaders? The question matters. See, the context of Jesus' words in John 10... Matt, sorry. My little friend here is not working. There we are. The context of Jesus' words in John 10 have been set by what's just happened in chapter 9. See, the Pharisees, the leaders of the Jews, have just driven out of the synagogue a blind man in chapter 9, verse 34. A blind man who has been healed by Jesus. And they've driven him out for daring to lecture them, for daring to tell them the truth that Jesus was the Christ. Here were not good shepherds, but bad shepherds. Shepherds who were more concerned for themselves than they were the people. They should have known that what this man said was true. See, as he speaks, verse 30, he says, now that is remarkable. This is chapter 9. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. Then verse 33, if this man were not from God, he could do nothing. See, the Pharisees should have known who Jesus was. They should have instinctively seen what he was doing, known what the scriptures have said, and put the two together and known who Jesus was. But they were bad shepherds. They weren't interested in leading people in the ways of God. They were only interested in their own well-being. They were only concerned for their power, to protect their power and their influence. They wanted no one who might challenge that, including a healed blind man. And you only have to turn the page to chapter 11 to see how far they'd go to protect their power and their influence, where the high priest in chapter 11, verse 48, declares, if we let him, that is Jesus, go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and then the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. And so they drive out the blind man, and they drive out Jesus. The Pharisees were only behaving just as the prophet Ezekiel had prophesied they would in Ezekiel chapter 34. Ezekiel in chapter 34 describes God's judgment on shepherds who have been unfaithful in their task of shepherding God's sheep. Both in the days of Ezekiel, but also looking forward to the days of Jesus. And Ezekiel describes these shepherds, these leaders, these kings, these Pharisees, as those who fed on and plundered the sheep. As those who were not concerned with the sheep's well-being, but only their own. And God promises in Ezekiel chapter 34 that he will rescue and feed and care for the sheep. And he will judge those bad shepherds. And he'll do it by setting up and sending one shepherd, a Davidic king, so that the sheep will have peace and security. And Jesus says, I am that shepherd. I am that good shepherd spoken of in Ezekiel 34. And it is an extraordinary claim. And John 10 then begins to unpack what kind of shepherd Jesus is claiming to be. What this shepherd that was promised will be like. And the first thing we see in verses 1 to 6 is that the good shepherd cares for his sheep. The good shepherd cares. See, look what Jesus says in verses 1 to 6. Now, Jesus is using picture language. Verse 6, he makes that clear. It's a figure of speech. So we don't need to press all the points too literally. But he's using a familiar picture to make his point. So he describes a familiar scene. Sheep in a sheep pen, verse 1. In a village, there would have been one large pen in which all the farmers would put their sheep. All the flocks would be mixed together. And the farmers would then hire a watchman to look after the sheep in the pen and to guard the gate against thieves and robbers. When the shepherd or one of the flocks came along, the watchman would open the gate for him, verse 3. The shepherd would then give a distinctive kind of whistle or call, and his flock would recognize the call, and they would all troop out, and he would lead them off into the hills for pastures. And Jesus is saying that as the shepherd, he cares for his people by leading the sheep, by leading the people. In other words, he's come to the pen to call his sheep, and they come, and he leads them, he brings them out to lead them to good pasture, to water. You need a shepherd to lead you and to care for you. See, we don't quite get this picture because in England, not being a sheep, but I guess if I was a sheep, you can pretty much live anywhere in England. There's always rain, and because there's always rain, there's plenty of water, which means there's plenty of grass. You can pretty much live wherever you can. And you can live in a field, and you don't need to worry about whether you can just be left on your own. You don't need someone with you to protect you from, generally, wolves and bears and lions, because there aren't such things. And generally, that's a picture of our shepherding, isn't it? As we drive along the country lanes of Sussex, what do we see? We see the sheep in the fields, but do you see a shepherd? No, not really. They're left on their own. They can get on with it. There's plenty of grass. You don't need to be worried about where you led them to. But in the Middle East, if you were a sheep, your whole life depended on your shepherd being a good shepherd. You needed a shepherd who'd be able to lead you to the best pastures. There wasn't grass everywhere. You needed a shepherd who'd be able to lead you to water. You needed a shepherd who'd be able to protect you from wolves and thieves, one who would free you from thickets when you got caught. You depended on your shepherd to lead you, to care for you. And Jesus is saying, I am that good shepherd. I am that good shepherd who's come to lead you and care for you. Depend on me. But know what else he says, verse 3. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. So Jesus is a shepherd who not just leads his sheep, but he knows each one of them by name. He calls them personally. He doesn't go to the pen, which is where the mixed flock up of all these different farmer sheep, and just issue a general invitation. Anyone want to follow me today? No, he knows each of his sheep by name, verse 3. So he says, Ruth, I'm here, I've come for you, come. John, I'm here, I've come for you. Rachel, Becky, James, Luke, I'm here, I've come for you, come. He calls each of his sheep by name. And a name is not just a label. When he says he knows our names, it means he knows who we are. He loves us. So to each one of his sheep, he can say, I know you. When you were being formed in your mother's womb, I knew you. When you took your first step, my eyes were on you. I remember your first day at school, when your parents split up, when your father died, I was there. I know your sorrows and your joys. I know how much you love to climb mountains and play football. I know how they treat you at work. I've heard what they say. I know your hopes and dreams. I know who you really are. He's the shepherd God. And he says to you, I am the one you've been longing for. I know your whole story. I know who you are. And I've come to take care of you. I'll lead you out, I'll go ahead of you, verse 4. I'm not like the bad shepherds who come to steal you and use you for their own purposes. I've come to lead you and bring you to the good pastures. I know who you are. Will you follow me? And the sheep know their shepherd. They listen to his voice, verse 3. They know his voice, verse 4. And because they know his voice, they follow. Even today in the Middle East, where that happens, a shepherd calls the sheep and his sheep come. They recognize his voice. They'll only follow the shepherd they know, the one who cares for them. And spiritually speaking, that's exactly what happens too, isn't it? Jesus' sheep hear his voice and follow. And so as God's people, we'll only listen to the shepherd's voice. We're not swayed by strangers' voices. Like the blind man. He didn't follow the Pharisees. He resisted them and was thrown out because they were strangers. And what happens next? In chapter 9, verse 35. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out. And when he found him. In other words, Jesus comes and finds him and calls him. Like a good shepherd. Who comes to lead, who comes to know his people. And the blind man, verse 37, believes and worships. He knows his shepherd and he follows. He knows his shepherd who cares for him. See, unlike the Pharisees who do not recognize and do not follow, because verse 6, they did not understand what Jesus was telling them. Who will you follow? Whose voice will you listen to? The one who cares for you, the one who knows you better than you know yourself, or the voice of the stranger who does not care for you. So you're going to listen to the politicians who don't even know your name, or the bands that you idolize who have never heard of you, or the footballer who doesn't know you from Adam, or your boss who doesn't know what makes you tick, or your friend who puts pressure on you to be someone you're not because they don't really know who you are. Or even just a general voice of the world that shouts, compromise, privatize your faith, live ethically how you want and still try and believe in God. Whose voice will you listen to? The stranger's or the good shepherd who cares for you, who knows you and knows what is best for you? The good shepherd cares for his sheep. And secondly, the good shepherd gives abundant life. Verses 7 to 10. See, what goes on now in verses 7 to 18 is not Jesus suddenly explaining verses 1 to 6 in detail, what Jesus called a figure of speech, but what Jesus does, he seems to pick up on some of the metaphors he uses and he expands them and uses them in slightly different ways. So he says, firstly, I am the gate for the sheep, verse 7. And he's still using the picture language from the world of sheep. Only now, he is using it in a slightly different way. There is no grass in the pen. So in order to live, the sheep need to be led from the pen out to the pasture. And the only person who's entitled to open the gate and lead the sheep out to pasture is the shepherd. And Jesus is saying, I am the one shepherd worth following because I am the only one who can open the gate and lead you out into lush pasture. And it's not just that I can open the gate, he says, I am the gate. If I were a sheep, and I'm not, I think I'd spend my time gazing longingly at that gate, thinking that gate is my way out to the pasture, to the rich pasture. And that's how Jesus wants us to look at him, that he is the gate to eternal life, to true life, to abundant life. Jesus says, look, all whoever came before me were thieves and robbers, verse 8. But here he's not talking about the leaders like Moses and Joshua and David and Isaiah and Jeremiah. No, he's probably talking about the false revolutionaries of his time who promised freedom. Freedom from the Romans, but who delivered nothing. He might be talking about the bad leaders of Israel who promised freedom, but again led them into exile. Who promised to care for them, but abused them. No, Jesus says, I am the gate. Verse 9, whoever enters through me will be saved. And he'll come in and he'll go out and he'll find pasture. And Jesus, again, using familiar Jewish language. It's the language of God's covenant to them. So you read in Deuteronomy 28, verse 6, where God is promising blessing for those who are obedient. He says, you'll be blessed when you come in and you'll be blessed when you go out. Jesus said, if you enter through me, you'll experience blessing. You'll find rich, lush pasture. It's a picture of safety and security. It's a picture of abundance. It's a picture of restored relationship with God as life was intended. You see, the thieves and the robbers and the false leaders, they come and promise much, but the reality is they've come to steal and kill and destroy your life. And Jesus says, I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. And so often we get that round the wrong way, don't we? We think if we go with the world and its leaders, well, they'll offer life to the full, but not Jesus. And we've marked Jesus down as the po-faced shepherd with sad eyes who makes our lives D-U-L-L dull. Follow anyone, we think, but not Jesus. Because following him will mean missing out on life. And it turns out we could not have got it more back to front. The very reason he came is to give us life. And Jesus says, I am the gate. Those who enter through me will have life. Life to the full. Pepsi Max life. And if a sheep is going to enjoy life to the full, it needs a shepherd who will lead it to lush pasture. If we're going to enjoy life to the full, we need a shepherd who will lead us into relationship with God. And that is exactly what Jesus came to do, to save us, verse 9. Whoever enters through me will be saved and so restored back to God. And the life that Jesus brings is not a slightly more rounded version of the old life. It's a whole new life. Because it's a whole new relationship with the God who made us. See, once we were cut off from him, now we've been restored to him. If we come to Jesus, if we enter through the gate, now we can have life as we were intended to have it from the beginning. And Jesus doesn't just promise life forever, but life to the full. Life to the full within the world of sheep conjures up images of fat sheep feasting in contentment on rich, lush pasture. That is what Jesus is offering us. That's what we've seen in John, isn't it? As he turned water into wine, and he didn't just turn it into rubbish wine, he didn't just turn it into Carver, he turned it into Dom Perignon. And he quenches the thirst of the woman. And as he feeds the 5,000, he doesn't just say, here's a few crumbs. That will tie you over until you get home. No, he gives them enough that they are full. It's abundant. Think about what Jesus promises us. A feast at the end days. He's not promising a few scraps. He's not saying, follow me and I'll give you a kind of so-so life. And by the end, by the time you get to heaven, it's going to be all right. No, he promises a feast and lushness and lavishness. It's pictures of abundant life, not a dull life. When I turned 17, I got a little Fiesta, F-Reg, blue, pretty cool. My friend Will and I put in a big bass stereo system. We carved out the holes for the speakers in the parcel shelf with his soldering iron. We tucked in the speaker cables under the carpet. We wired in the stereo. It was great. And I used to sit on the drive, pretending to drive, listening to my stereo. I didn't have my license. There wasn't much else I could do. But I was happy. After a few lessons, I didn't just sit there. I then moved the car a little bit down the drive and then reverse. And then I reversed it into the garage and then I moved it out of the garage. And then I moved it down the drive a bit more and I moved it back up the drive. All the time listening to my stereo. And I was happy. And I spent many an hour, sadly, doing just that. But then the day came when I passed my test. Now I could drive. Now I could listen to my tunes as I sped along the country lanes. Or nicely driven. See, although I thought I was driving, as I sat on my drive, now I really was driving. And it didn't come close to sitting on my drive. It was driving to the full. And many do life like I drove on the drive. Yeah, they're happy enough. But if we don't know God, if we don't come to Jesus and enter through the gate, we won't know what our lives are for. And however hard we practice and however much we seek to fill our lives with things we think will bring fullness, we think will satisfy foreign holidays and bigger houses and faster cars and multiple relationships, deep down we know they don't satisfy. They don't even come close to enjoying life to the full. No, only Jesus can offer that as we restore to the God who made us, who is the source of all life. And as he sets us free to live the life that we were made for, a life that is satisfied, content, and full of joy. He's the one who gives abundant life to all who enter through him. He is the good shepherd who gives abundant life. Why would you want to go anywhere else? Are you driving on the drive or are you driving to the full? And if you're a Christian, are you tempted to go back to driving on the drive? Because you're beginning to believe the lies of the world that say it's better on the drive. That what the world offers is better and satisfying. That all that it looks one day that you look out on you as a Christian and you think, actually, I'd like to go back to my old life. It seems that sin was more fun. I could spend my money how I wanted to. I could live my life how I wanted to. I could do what I wanted to. But that's doing life on the drive. Never satisfies, and we know it never satisfies, but are we beginning to believe the lies that says it does? Or are we hearing the good shepherd who says, I give true life, full life? Jesus says, the world comes to steal and kill and destroy your life. I come to give you abundant life. Whose voice are you going to listen to? The one who cares for you or the strangers who don't? Good shepherd gives abundant life. Thirdly, the good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep, verses 11 to 18. Good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep, verse 11. And note the word for in that sentence. It's for the sheep. It's an act of sacrifice. See, the hired hand, verse 12, legs it at the first sign of a wolf. He abandons the sheep to be killed and scattered because he cares, verse 13, nothing for them. They're not his sheep. We need a shepherd who won't abandon us when the wolf comes. And the wolf we face is death and judgment as a result of our sin. And we need a shepherd who protects us and guards us and cares for us. We need a shepherd who will take our judgment, our punishment. And Jesus says, I am that good shepherd, verse 14. And the reason he is the good shepherd is because he lays down his life for his sheep. He protects them from the wolf. And look at why he does. It's because he knows us personally. It's what we saw in verses 1 to 6. You see, it isn't that he just gives his life for sheep in general. He knows our name. And such is his love for us that he parallels his relationship with us to that of him and his Father. He says, my relationship with my Father is like this, and I want a relationship with you like that. And so he saw your face and my face, and he saw the danger we were in, and because he loved not just people in general, but you and me, he gave his life as a sacrifice for our sin, verse 15, to save us from the wolf. From the judgment we deserved for rebelling against God. And his death was not just for those sheep who were Jewish, but he says for all, his sheep who come from every nation, verse 16. I have other sheep and I must bring them also. In other words, he's our shepherd. particularly as those who are Gentiles. He's our shepherd who lays down his life for us. And Jesus makes it clear that his death was no accident. It's not something he was bullied into. It wasn't cosmic child abuse, as one author wrongly described his death. No, verse 17. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and I have authority to take it up again. In other words, Jesus chose to die and rise again. And in his love, the Father was willing to give up his dear Son to save us from the danger we were in, from his judgment for our rebellion. And in his love, the Son came willingly. He willingly obeyed his Father. That's why the Father loved him, verse 17. It's not just for this act of obedience, but for every act of obedience that preceded. The Son came willingly out of obedience and love. He's the good shepherd. I remember once reading about a soldier in the First World War. He'd been wounded, and in hospital the doctor said to him, "I'm sorry, son, you've lost your arm." To which the soldier replied, "I didn't lose it, I gave it." And Jesus is saying, he is the good shepherd who chooses to give his life for his sheep. It's not cosmic child abuse. It's an unbelievable act of love. He does not abandon us. He walks with us and dies for us to protect us from the wolf. And he gives life to the fawn. He's the good shepherd. But as some hear this, well, some will think he is mad and demon-possessed, verse 20. Others will see that and hear him for who he is, verse 21. Which are you? Maybe you've never followed this shepherd before, but you're hearing his voice clearly this morning. You see he is the good shepherd who knows his sheep, who gives abundant life, who lays down his life. And you hear him calling. But something is just holding you back. You're thinking maybe of all those times you've been let down and failed by other shepherds. You've followed others before and they've let you down. You've tried other religions before and it's gone nowhere. And you don't want to be hurt again. Look again at the good shepherd. He lays down his life for you. Do you know any other shepherd who would do that for you? If you live for your career, would your boss lay down his life for you? If you live for what others think of you, would the friends whose opinion matters so much lay down their lives for you? No. Jesus is the good shepherd who lays down his life for his sheep. So why not follow him? Who are you going to follow? And if you are a believer, well then rejoice in your good shepherd. Rejoice in the amazing comfort that he knows you, who gives you abundant life, and who has laid down his life for you, that you may have life to the full. Why would you want to follow any other, including yourself? Why would you want to begin to think that somehow your good deeds and religious acts could ever give you the life you want? Follow the good shepherd who lays down his life for you.